At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
I'm John Batchelor. NATO, Ukraine, the confrontation. The story of NATO now reaches back and forward into this confrontation in Europe. The headlines from the London Times are stark. New armed conflict in Europe is a real risk, warns NATO. Subhead, talks with Russia over Ukraine end without resolution. This is coverage of the meeting in Brussels in these last hours of the NATO principals and representatives of the Russian Foreign Ministry and the Russian Defense Ministry. The U.S., of course, was present as a leading member of NATO. This was, we learn from the reporting, the first time in 2 years that senior Russian representatives had met with NATO. The conversation about what is to be done, not only about Ukraine, but about NATO. The Russian Federation in these last days has made fresh demands that NATO withdraw, pull back, roll back. There are many verbs here. It's military infrastructure that now stretches to the Russian frontier in the Baltic states, in Poland, certainly in along the Ukraine border. And the Russian Federation is saying, go back to 1997, because, and now the references to the Clinton administration and the Bush administration in the late 20th century, and what was said and what was not said about NATO's embracing the former Eastern European states that had been under the Soviet Empire, Empire's umbrella. That question is now much in hand in Moscow and will or will not be part of the settlement of the Ukraine conflict. I welcome Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, who has traveled much in Russia and along the borderland for many years. Anatole, a very good day to you. The Hello. Russians demand, suggest, warn, implore NATO to honor its understanding, the Russian understanding, of rolling back military infrastructure to where it was in 1997. NATO's response is, we will not be told who can and who cannot be members of NATO. Of course, they're looking at Ukraine, which has ambitions to join NATO. However, the history here is important. What is it that the Russians are claiming? And is there merit to this threat they feel from NATO rolling right up to their frontier? Good day.
Hello, John. NATO, in the person of the then US Secretary of State, James Baker, did give a verbal promise to Gorbachev, then Soviet, not Russian leader, not to expand. But they never gave it in writing. I mean, I know the verbal promise was given because I know well a British diplomat who was in the room at the time. But that was never a formal or legal guarantee. There was no treaty with Moscow ensuring that. Nonetheless, Russia does have some reason to feel betrayed. Every subsequent Russian government, and that's true of Yeltsin as much as Putin, has made its opposition to NATO enlargement clear. And above all, the Yeltsin government first stated in 1997, so what, 24 years ago, its absolutely categorical and implacable opposition to NATO membership for Ukraine and Georgia, both because these are countries on Russia's borders, but also because, unlike the Baltic states, there are territorial issues involving Russia. And Russia's largest naval base at Sevastopol is situated in Crimea, which was then part of Ukraine. So Russia has always been strongly opposed to NATO membership for these countries. There's nothing new about that. What is new, of course, is Russia's willingness to take, well, in 2014, to take military action, and now to threaten further military action to prevent this happening, or rather, because there's no actual prospect of Ukraine becoming a member of NATO in the foreseeable future, but basically to rule it out and thereby to consolidate some remaining Russian influence over Ukraine. And in the Russian view, you know, if you can rule out further NATO expansion, then that's the basis for a new and more consensual relationship with NATO and the West as a whole.
Jens Stoltenberg, the General Secretary of NATO, has this quote in the London Times reporting in the form of a warning. Quote, if Russia once again uses force against Ukraine and further invades Ukraine, then we have to seriously look into the need to further increase our presence in the eastern part of the alliance. Translation, Latvia and Estonia said today, meaning yesterday, that all the Baltic states were lobbying NATO to expand its military footprint in their countries as a deterrent to Russia. Summing this all up, Anatole, it looks like an arms race is breaking out in Europe, and the former NATO countries that regarded themselves as protected by the American umbrella are looking to buy weapons. That is not a good direction. Is it inevitable?
Well, I'm a little bit skeptical about this, to be honest, because if all this NATO rhetoric was serious, you would see two things happening. You would see the United States deploying major ground forces, not necessarily to Eastern Europe yet, but basically sending them back to their bases in Germany and Belgium and so forth. And of course, you would see the European members of NATO greatly increasing their military spending and carrying out serious military reforms intended to turn their armed forces into serious armed forces, which I'm sorry to say, in most cases, they're not at present. Now, actually, none of this is happening. If you look at the German government, there have been some very anti-Russian comments, but the German Greens have always been strongly opposed to higher military spending or to German military interventions. So that, for me, a good deal of this is posturing. But above all, of course, Stoltenberg is threatening to send more troops to the Baltic states and Eastern Europe. But Russia shows no sign whatsoever of invading the Baltic states and Eastern Europe and has never threatened to do so. Stoltenberg is not talking about sending NATO troops to Ukraine, which, of course, Russia really might invade.
We come to events in these hours. This is back to Vienna. We started in Geneva. We went to Brussels. Now we're in Vienna for the meeting of the 57 country grouping that is called the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, the OSCE. Monitoring the Ukraine conflict as best it can these last 8 years. The Wall Street Journal reports Ukraine has been the focus of talks this week between Russia and the U.S.-led Western allies, but wasn't present at negotiations in Geneva or Brussels. On Thursday, in other words, right now in Europe, in Vienna, Kyiv gets a seat at the table. Whether Russia will engage remains an open question. Kyiv, Ukraine, what remains of Ukraine, is petitioning to join NATO. NATO has not said no. That's critical to the Russian understanding of what is a red line and what is not a red line. Is there a compromise anywhere here that you can see, Anatole, between these transnational organizations, NATO and the OSCE, and this dialogue between Washington and Moscow directly that started in Geneva?
Yes, I mean, in principle, there are two compromises possible. The first is, and by the way, I mean, they both of them remain official Western positions. The first is that NATO should, in fact, guarantee not to station new troops in Eastern Europe, in return, of course, for Russia making certain promises not to station more troops on the borders of NATO and withdrawing the troops that have been deployed on the borders of Ukraine. That's the first. The second compromise is that the West, led by America, should live up to its commitment to the Minsk II agreement on autonomy for Eastern Ukraine, for a demilitarized Donbass region, under Ukrainian sovereignty, without Russian troops, but enjoying full autonomy guaranteed under international treaty, and perhaps with an international peacekeeping force. Because, and by the way, I mean, this is why the Ukrainians oppose this, to have an autonomous region of this kind within Ukraine would, in effect, act as a block on Ukraine joining NATO. So it would, in a way, be a, you know, it would be a way of guaranteeing Russia's concerns or meeting Russia's concerns over NATO enlargement without the humiliation of a NATO climb down or surrender on this. So both of these are perfectly possible compromises, but the question is whether the West will put them forward and whether Russia would accept them. My sense is that Russia would accept them because it would give Russia, you know, most of what it actually wants. Of course, Russia would not get a formal guarantee not to expand NATO, but then it wouldn't need it.
The stepping back, the Russians, do you sense that they are pleased that they're now back at the table as an equal to NATO and to the United States in particular? It's been described to me that at the end of the Cold War, with the way the Soviet Union ended, Russia felt about 2 feet tall, and now they're back to being 10 feet tall. Is that some reward for these threatening remarks?
No, I don't think so, not anymore, because actually, in the years after the Cold War, the West repeatedly invited Russia to talks, ostensibly to negotiate with NATO, and then just overruled Russia, didn't actually meet any of Russia's concerns or compromise with Russia's interest. There have been very clear statements by the Russian government that they're not going to accept that again, that they want concrete concessions. My fear is that they have said that so categorically and so often that just as NATO can't, you know, abandon the possibility of Ukraine's NATO membership, so Russia will not be able to accept, you know, just a diplomatic fudge in which NATO agrees to go on talking without agreeing on anything. At least that's my fear. But I think if you look at what the Russians have been saying, that's a pretty well-based fear.
The puzzle then about what does Russia want? Is it to be won at the NATO tables? Is it to be won or achieved in direct dialogue with Washington? What is the likely best place for Russia to be satisfied? And the OSCE is another possibility in Geneva, in Vienna.
Russian goals are not mysterious. Russia wants to exclude the possibility of its most important neighbors, which means above all Ukraine, but also Belarus and Georgia, from joining an anti-Russian alliance. And as part of that, of course, it also wants to retain, not recreate the Soviet Union, but retain a predominant level of Russian influence in these regions. The Russians refer endlessly to the Monroe Doctrine and say, look, we're not looking for anything more than America does, which is not to, you know, absolutely dictate the governments or, you know, policies of states in Central America, but to ensure that they will not become part of anti-American alliances and that America will be able to defend its vital interests in Central America. That's what Russia wants. It's really not mysterious.
I'm speaking with Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. There's other action along what used to be the near abroad, the Russian frontier. And when we come back, the sudden departure of order in Kazakhstan in Central Asia and what is to be done. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.